Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to a very special episode of the Guys in Ties podcast. This is Dustin. I've actually got Rob sitting here with me, and it's because this is a, as I said, a special episode. It is our 100th anniversary episode, and by anniversary, I mean we've just had 100 episodes. So
just our 100th episode.
Right. So it's been good, and we're going to talk about, we'll get to that a little bit later. We'll reminisce a little bit at the end. So if like, if you just came for the sports and don't really care about us, that's cool, and you can just quit at the end of the podcast. But yeah, we're gonna talk about UNC. We're gonna look ahead to the rest of the schedule and maybe do some NCAA tournament talk. And of course, we'll talk about this podcast and how cool it's been to do this for 100 times and how fun it's been over the past couple of years. So we're gonna get into that. But before we start, we would like to talk about our sponsors, BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football is sadly over, sorry Rob, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It is the best place to cover your bets, and sign up is free. Head to the website to use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Please use promo code ARMCHAIR, ARMCHAIR, at checkout. We are also sponsored by eBay sneakers. From rare dead stock to the latest release, you can find the exact sneaker you're looking for on eBay. As the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is the place to go to cop the pair you've been eyeing. And with eBay's authenticity guarantee, a team of independent professional authenticators perform a rigorous inspection of the sneakers you purchase before they're sent to you, so you can shop confidently knowing your pair is the real deal. And for the sneaker sellers out there, eBay has eliminated selling fees on sneakers $100 or more, making it free to sell your or flip your collection. With other sites taking in as much as 25% of what you're going to have a lot of extra money left for, guess what? More sneakers. Check out ebay.com/sneakers today.
UVA football is the softest bunch of cream puffs, bow tie wearing, brie cheese eating, NASCAR wearing wussies I've ever seen in my life. I'm gonna punch people from UVA right in the neck. They wear suits to games. That's absurd.
So let's just jump right into the, I would say probably the most vintage UVA basketball we've seen kind of this season, a real strangling of a UNC, a team that frankly was getting pretty hot. I feel like they had reeled off some wins recently, but UVA beats them 60-48. It was pretty brutal to watch at times, and you know, it made me feel good. It was like the teams of old where, you know, our offense was pretty decent and then our defense was really good on Saturday. Rob, what were some of your thoughts before we get into the specifics? What were some of your thoughts about the game on Saturday?
Yeah, well, I mean, like you said, definitely a vintage performance. I mean, Virginia jumped out to, I think it was a 21-4 lead to start the game. So, I mean, that just screams, you know, vintage Virginia. And Dickie V is screaming and talking about how,
oh,
you
baby.
Know, I love Dickie V in his own way. But Dickie V is kind of talking about during the game how this team is a little bit different and, you know, different build offensively. And he was all right. But, you know, if you just watch the game Saturday night, you wouldn't have known. It's definitely a vintage performance, as in the defense. You know, North Carolina, I think they got within 9 at one point, but never really was able to claw back. You know, it was a really impressive defensive performance, no question.
You know, weird thing is that Dickie V actually said at one point that this was not like a vintage UVA team with some of the better players that, you know, we've had in the past. I think he's remembering the, of course, the championship year a couple years ago where we had four NBA players really on that team if we're counting Diakite, who is currently in the G League. It ties in the G League too, but he got drafted. So I feel like he's remembering that, but we've got Jay Huff, who I think probably could be either drafted or he'll probably be signed at least.
He'll get a shot, I think.
I think he'll get a shot, especially because he's been shooting really well this year from deep. Sam Hauser, who is a pretty good college player, and he'll probably at least play overseas for a while, which should be fun to watch. And we've got just some other really good players as well. Trey Murphy seems to really be breaking out right now. He's getting really consistent from deep, and also he's playing some great defense as well. So, I mean, I can understand how it's not like a team of like superstars like we had a couple years ago, who are definitely going to be drafted. And, you know, they've been talking about getting drafted all year. You look at DeAndre Hunter. He was getting all-star votes and everything. But this is definitely more of a Virginia team than that team was. Like, if we're talking about over the past 10 years or so, thinking about guys who maybe transfer in to get a second chance, talking about guys who are at UVA for 5 years and are better, they get better and better every year, looking at Jay Huff. Looking at good guard play and solid point guard play, I think this is probably the most vintage Virginia team we've had in a while.
Yeah, and you know, there was an interesting Athletic article. It was probably like a week or two ago, and they were just interviewing, they kept the coaches' names anonymous, but just interviewing ACC coaches about other ACC teams. And I thought the quote about Virginia was pretty interesting. They were like, yeah, you know, this kind of feels like the first Tony Bennett team in a couple year that's just not loaded with pros, which I hadn't really thought about. Like, you know, you go to the championship team in the year before, like Ty Jerome, Kyle Guy, Mamadi Diakite. If you go back far enough, you had Joe Harris, you had Justin Anderson. And you look at this year's team, you know, you hope Jay Huff can get there. You hope maybe Sam Hauser gets a shot. Trey Murphy, I think, will be, even though he's a year or so out. But yeah, it was just kind of an interesting way to phrase it. But that said, you know, I think what we've seen with really, really good clarity, especially against North Carolina, is really just what this team is. This is a team that scores from the 3 through 5 positions, and we play with 2 point guards on the floor, in essence, to facilitate the 3 through 5. And, you know, it was kind of interesting. We saw, I feel like, a bit more mover blocker against North Carolina than we did previously in some of the other games. And we saw Trey Murphy actually as the blocker and Hauser playing the 3 as the mover, kind of circling around. But I think the identity of this team has become really clear. You know, Sam Hauser has become a good defender. Reese Beekman is kind of becoming the glue guy, if you will, you know, not the main point guard, but he's getting the rebounds, he's getting assists, generally keeping turnovers pretty low. And our scorers are Murphy, Hauser, and Huff. And you have 2 point guards on the floor to facilitate that. And defensively, I think this team has come a long, long way as well. So it takes so much time each year to figure out what this team is. And, you know, we're still kind of figuring out how the bench is going to, like, finalize, you know, how Tomas gets in there. Is Casey going to be able to carve out a role or be consistent enough offensively to keep a role? Anyway, but, like, I feel like we finally know what the starting five is, at least. You know, two distributors and three scorers. It's just inverted from the way most teams are.
Yeah, this team is incredibly balanced. It's become much more balanced than it had been previously. You know, the offense at the beginning of the year was super hot, and the defense was not hot. And then at this point, we've kind of evened out a little bit as time has gone on. I think that's been a nice thing for this team because, you know, at the beginning, you know, we saw the very first game, Trey Murphy comes out, hits what, six threes?
However many. Yeah, and, a lot.
And we were like, oh, this team's good. We're good to go. And then, of course, you know, we lose to San Francisco. We lose to Gonzaga pretty badly. And I think my guess is that this team is focused a lot on defense and, you know, trying to hide the flaws of some of the defenders on the floor. You know, for the first, not for the first time, but for some of the time on Saturday, we were double teaming North Carolina's bigs, which we haven't been doing a lot of this season. I think probably because we've been having trouble rotating and getting to the backside. And, you know, just with the size of our forwards, you know, we've got Sam Hauser, who's probably a little bit undersized at the four position. And, or at least he's not really strong on the block.
Mm-hmm. He's not the traditional, like, Tony Bennett athletic defender, a Darion Atkins, a Gill, right. Isaiah Wilkins, Mamadi.
Dikite. Right. And so if you're looking at him like that, he's not that. He is a very prolific shooter, a very good scorer, and a really good rebounder, too. Jay Huff, also an odd shape for a five, probably. He's super skinny. He's definitely gotten more muscular over time, but still can get pushed around a little bit down low. I think that with what they thought with North Carolina's bigs is double them, don't let them be able to pass out of it, and then we'll get just make sure the rotations get there. And luckily, our guards and Trey Murphy, too, did a good job of rotating to the other guys, getting there. Making them throw up some bad shots. North Carolina only shot 12.5%. They were 2 of 16 from 3. And then they were 34.5% overall shooting and only scoring 48 points. First time North Carolina didn't have a double-digit score in a very long time. I don't remember the exact date, but I remember seeing that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the dates kept getting longer because I know, like, ESPN came out with a stat that's like, this is the first time they haven't had a double-digit score in, like, at least 25 years. And then another stat came out and it was, like, since 70-something. And then I think I saw something since, like, 60-something. So, like, a long time. And yeah, you know, like, another one of these stats, you know, there were a bunch of these that came out after the game. UVA is the first program to defeat North Carolina 7 consecutive times since NC State won 8. Against them from 1972 to 1975. How about this? I love this. This was from ACC Men's Basketball on Saturday. With tonight's win against UNC, Tony Bennett becomes just the third coach in ACC Men's Basketball history to lead his program to 10 straight winning conference seasons, joining Dean Smith and Mike Krzyzewski. Like, wow. I had a lot of friends, you know, some from high school too, that, you know, beating Carolina means a lot to them in basketball. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it might be like Duke. I feel like the game's been a bit more contentious lately. At times, I feel like we kind of forget almost how big a rivalry this is just because it has been so one-sided a long time. I mean, North Carolina hasn't beat UVA at home since 2012. I mean, we were in high school the last time that happened. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think this really was probably, you know, maybe the signature win of the season just because it was so grinded out, but it also felt like kind of smooth. Like, it just felt like vintage Virginia basketball.
You know, there's a couple teams that have really struggled against UVA since around 13-14 season when UVA really started to come into the national spotlight. North Carolina has been one of them. Louisville has been one of them as well. Louisville's really struggled to beat UVA.
For some really good teams.
Really, yes. Just
could not beat UVA.
Really good Louisville teams just ran into a brick wall of really good UVA teams. And Pitt as well. Pitt struggled to beat UVA as well. So three, like, pretty good teams in general have really struggled against this team. Now, of course, you could say the same thing for UVA. We've struggled to beat Duke during that same time. And so I think it's just interesting how, UNC has fallen seven straight times. What's that over? Like four seasons, maybe?
Yeah, since our fourth year.
Was it the
Kyle Guy's freshman season?
Yeah. Because
they beat us on the road, and then we beat them. A top 10 team, mm-hmm. North Carolina and JPJ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just think that's an interesting thing to look at is, you know, what teams are good against other teams and why can we not beat Duke, but we can beat North Carolina every year when usually they split that series pretty evenly. I think it's just an interesting thing to look at.
Yeah, no question. I mean, like, I know Mike Bray. Notre Dame struggled recently, mm-hmm. but they had some good teams. And Mike Bray, I was talking about how they can never beat Virginia. Jim Christian just got fired at Boston College.
Right.
There was a couple of close games in there, but
right, we always struggle against Boston College.
Yeah.
You know, Florida State's always a closer game than it should be. You know, speaking of Florida State, we play them tonight. That's gonna be a great game, top 20 matchup. I'm excited. We'll talk about that later, but. I just like looking at this and, you know, seeing who struggles against who. And, you know, I think it's really interesting that, you know, UNC's struggled to beat us because I feel like, but at the same time, it makes a lot of sense because UNC's built inside out a lot of times. And UNC often has really good big men down low. Their guard play over the last couple of years has been kind of spotty, to say the least, you know. Mm-hmm. Cole Anthony comes in last year, highly touted freshman, doesn't quite, you know, he's really good, but the team is not great around him. And, you know, if you're not going to be able to shoot outside, if you're not going to be able to overshoot Virginia's defense, you're going to have a tough time beating them down low. And so that's what I think UNC's just kind of run into a buzzsaw of Virginia teams that have been really good at defending the paint.
Definitely. And I mean, heck, even this year's team, which isn't the best at defending the paint,
right?
You know, we surrendered more points in the paint than we scored ourselves.
Yeah.
But, you know, our three-pointing made the difference. Three-point shooting, that is. That's kind of like something I want to talk about as we get into this game against North Carolina on Saturday in particular is, like we said earlier, we kind of know what the starting five is now. We kind of know how it operates. You know, two distributors are two point guards, and we have three bigger guys who can score, and they can all shoot from three really well, actually. But the sixth man has kind of like, you know, ebbed and flowed. Like some games it'd be Shedrick, and it's a good mm-hmm. thing. It looks like Shedrick's back now,
yeah.
Which is a good development. You know, some games it was Casey Morcell, and Casey Morcell actually started some games earlier in the year. But more recently it's been Tomas Waldetensai, which I like. You know, he's kind of a streaky shooter. You know, against mm-hmm. North Carolina, he played 20 minutes. He was 1-for-5 from the field, 1-for-4 from three. You know, that was his only points, was that 1 3-point basket. But at the same time, Tomas kind of gives you, you know, the only real, you know, high octane is not really the right word, but he's kind of like the only, you know, guard that kind of scares you from a defensive standpoint as far as scoring goes, I feel mm-hmm. like. And he's been, you know, more of the sixth man the past few games. You know, he played 20 minutes against North Carolina. No other player off the bench played more than 8 minutes. That was Casey Morcell, actually. So what do you think about this? Do you think Tomas has kind of solidified the spot as the sixth man? Do you think it'll vary based on matchups? You know, now that we know the starting lineup, you know, how does the rest of the rotation kind of go from here?
You know, I think that's a really interesting point. I think to make it easy on myself, it's going to depend on the game. But
It's all matchups.
I'll explain myself, though, because, you know, Waldetensai, as you said, is kind of known as a streaky shooter. Tomas has been known to go on and off throughout his years. You know, think about last year against UNC or against a team like, I think it was Pitt, maybe, where he went off for maybe six or seven or eight threes. Mm-hmm. In that
something
game.
Like that, yeah.
And so you know, today he was 1-for-4. So, and the one he hit was like some ridiculous shot over
crazy,
some
yeah.
defender.
It was like fading away.
Right.
Like.
Right. So if you're going to have a guy out there shooting that kind of shot, I'd prefer Tomas as opposed to Casey. You know, Casey at this point in the season, you know, in the middle of the season, it seems like he got his confidence up a little bit. He was shooting well. He was playing well. He was playing good defense, still playing good defense, but, you know, his shooting kind of dipped back down a little bit, unfortunately. The thing about Casey, I think he never, there's no shot he doesn't like. I think Casey is willing to take any shot he sees that's open. And I think part of his development is letting him know, you know, when do you attack and when do you keep the ball moving? Mm-hmm. Some of the things, you know, because Casey loves those like fadeaway baseline long twos, and those are frustrating because some, if they go in, it's like, oh, that's great, what a great shot.
Casey's back, he's got his confidence,
he's back, baby. But like other times it just clanks off the rim and it's like, man, like I feel like we could have gotten a better shot on that possession. But I think that the other thing about Tomas is he's more experienced, he's played a lot more than Casey at this point in his career. Tomas does not, he didn't turn the ball over on Saturday. He had 2 rebounds. He only had 1 foul. He knows the defense pretty well as well. I think with Casey, you've got a more probably agile defender who can guard a different type of player. But if, you know, North Carolina's guards didn't seem to want to do anything. North Carolina's basing it, trying to get it into the big man. You know, they had 3 big men who were really trying to do all the scoring. Bacot, Garrison Brooks, and of course Walker Kessler, who was actually a recruit for that UVA wanted for a while until North Carolina kind of pulled him away. Walker Kessler was their leading scorer with 9 points in only 11 minutes. So they were really trying to feed it inside, and it just wasn't quite working out for them. The guards really weren't doing anything at all. They're, you know, Caleb Love, their 5-star freshman point guard, was 0 of 3 from 3, 2 of 9 from the field, only 4 points and only 3 assists as well in 25 minutes. Tough showing for him, and, you know, I think our guards did the – I think Beekman was guarding him most of the time, actually. But, like, our guards in general did a really good job of frustrating North Carolina's people.
Definitely. And, yeah, you know, I think, like you said, it's kind of depend – going to kind of vary game by game. And, you know, this was actually a game where our starters played a lot. You know, Kihei played 34 minutes. Reese Beekman played 32. Sam Hauser played 36. Jay Huff played 34, which is great. If Jay Huff stays out of foul trouble, you hope he can play that. And yeah, kind of unusual. Trey Murphy played the least amount of minutes of the starters with 25 minutes. He was largely replaced by Tomas in that lineup. So, you know, it is going to vary by game. You know, with Shedrick presumably back now, I think one thing we are going to see is we're going to see Cafaro's minutes decrease potentially almost to none. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see Shedrick kind of fill in that primary role as Jay Huff's backup. So I think that's kind of safe to say in the front court at least. But yeah, you know, in the back court, I do think it's going to vary a little bit. You know, I'd be excited if Tomas can really seize that role, if we can get 15, 20 minutes out of Tomas a game, good minutes, you know, even if he's not hitting his shots like he was against North Carolina. You know, I think he's developed to the point where he can play more consistently on the defensive end. And, you know, I'm not saying he's a better defender than Casey Morsell, but, you know, if you keep his offensive potential out there, I think you're willing to accept a slight decrease in defense. So that said, though, I mean, you get a big guard, or maybe you get a guard that, you know, is really hot and you need to put someone on them, I could see Casey still having a role as well.
Yeah, you know, and I'm actually going to push back a little bit. I think I would actually prefer if Shedrick was the sixth man, like, who's getting the most minutes.
Okay.
I feel like if we're able to, you know, rest Hauser or rest Huff a little bit more, save them a little bit for the end of the season, while still getting probably our best, honestly, probably our best big defender is Shedrick at this point. I would rather put him on someone than Huff. Like, Huff is great, and he's great in recovery and blocking shots, but I think Shedrick is the best on-ball defender. Now, he did have 3 fouls on Saturday. I'm not going to hold that against him. He hasn't played in a long time. Those are some very talented big men UNC has. As he gets bigger and as he gets back in more game speed, I feel like, you know, especially moving on next year and the years after that, I feel like it gets a lot easier for him to do that and to make sure he doesn't foul on those things. But I think Shedrick's our best big defender, and I think that if we come up across, like, you know, in the tournament, if we come across like a Garza, for example, like Huff, like, Shedrick's gonna need to play a lot, and honestly Cafaro is probably the best matchup there, you know, until he fouls out. But I think Shedrick might honestly have the best chance, because Garza is just gonna eat Huff alive down low. It's not because Huff's a bad defender. It's just Garza is just so much stronger than him down low. Shedrick's not much bigger than Huff, but I think his instincts are a little bit better, especially when it comes to shot blocking a big man, for example. I think, you know, there was one point where Shedrick got at least a deflection or made a good play on the ball against the big man. There's like three pump fakes, but he just kept his feet on the ground until it actually went up. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him continue to develop, get back to game speed so that he can be more of a factor moving forward.
Definitely. I mean, his ceiling is so high. I mean, that's the thing we kind of have to remember with this entire team is, you know, the starting lineup, with the exception of Reese Beekman, is all upperclassmen. But you look at the guys that weren't able to crack the rotation this year, you know, I think it speaks more to the players we have on court than, you know, the ability of the players who aren't on the court. You know, Jabri Abdur-Rahim, you know, you hope Carson McCorkle is going to be a really great shooter. Caden Shedrick could legit be an all-ACC type player by the time things are said and done. So certainly a lot of talent, you know, on this bench that, you know, that was the thing at the beginning of the season. How are we going to play all these guys? We do have so many guys. I mean, our roster makeup, if you just look at the recruiting rankings, you know, this is one of the best, you know, pure roster builds that Tony Bennett has ever coached. But what we've seen is how, you know, as it always does, it consolidates into a, call it a 7-person, maybe 8 on occasion, rotation. And, you know, that's what we've seen the development of this year. And that's what we were all excited about, right? I mean, that's what I was really, you know, like how Jabri Abdur-Rahim came in with so much hype. You know, how do we get him on the floor? You know, McCoy had so much hype going into the season. You know, like, how is McCoy going to fit in? And, you know, we've just seen some really good players, you know, just not, I don't want to say not crack the rotation, but essentially just not become part of the rotation when this team is best.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing is like, and this always happens with Virginia teams, the rotation really shrinks come ACC time. It becomes very predictable who's going to come in and who's not. So, you know, at this point, our starting five is probably not going to change the rest of the season unless there's an injury or a suspension or COVID or something like that. I think that, you know, we're probably going to see Casey or Tomas come off the bench first, maybe Shedrick if Huff gets an early foul or something like that, because Tony likes to yank him as soon as he gets a foul, which I think is smart. I think that we're pretty much set in our ways now, and we pretty much at this point are going to know who's going to come in when during this game, and I like that. I like the consistency, because at the beginning of the season, it was super weird. It was like, okay, how are we going to play 11 guys who legit, we thought had a shot to play? You know, you're talking about Kafaro. Wait, how is he going to get minutes? You know, when is McCoy going to get minutes? When is Jabri Abdur-Rahim, our, you know, best recruit in a long time, going to get minutes?
We had Cody Statman in there too.
Right. Cody was healthy and still playing. So I feel like we, at this point, it's more comforting. That's a good problem to have, is like too many good players.
Yep.
But it's even more comforting now. It's like, okay, we know it's consistent. And I think it's good for the players too. It's more consistent that way. So you're not just like, you're not having players thinking, oh, am I going to get, you know, 20 minutes tonight? Or am I going to get 2 minutes tonight? And I think that was happening a lot at the beginning of the season. And I think that this is more stable.
Definitely. I mean, it's also a mindset thing too. If you're a player and you know that your spot is up for grabs, I mean, going into the season, you know, that 2 and 3 spot really seemed like anybody could play there. You had like 5 or 6 guys competing for that. So once the rotation is set, you can focus more on cohesion, working together, as opposed to actually competing for the spot. So I'm sure those competitions will be red hot again at the beginning of next season.
Yeah.
But this is where you want to be right now in the season.
Yeah. I think, you know, talking about, unless you have more stuff to talk about with the rotation, I'd like to move on to our schedule moving forward. Of course, we're recording this on President's Day, Monday. It's like 4, so we've got like less than 3 hours to the FSU game. Not an ideal time to record because we're not going to be able to talk about it. Honestly, some of you will probably listen to this after the game, so we're not really going to talk about it. And, you know, hopefully we win, and that'll be probably our best win of the season by far if we do win. If we lose, it just kind of solidifies the same kind of the narrative that's been tossed around a little bit is that UVA is good but doesn't have any good wins so far. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are saying our best win so far is at Clemson, who at the time was ranked number 12, but has since, you know, imploded, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, we beat a UNC team that's, frankly, very much on the bubble. We're going to play at FSU. That's probably our last chance to play a team that has really good tournament hopes until the ACC tournament. And, you know, who knows who we're going to play there.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, knowing how Duke works and how our rivalry with them goes, not surprise me if Duke gives us a very, very good game next Saturday.
Yeah.
Especially, they had a bunch of close games and they beat NC State pretty bad. So we'll see about that. But yeah, I mean, I will be excited to play Louisville. You know, this is kind of like, going into the season, we thought this was kind of like the meat of the schedule. Like you always talked about, and I always agree, you know, like that North Carolina, Duke, Florida State stretch. Yeah, so obviously we'll see how it goes tonight against Florida State. I guess you'll see how well we actually know the team after listening to this and be like, did that happen against Florida State?
Right.
We'll see. But yeah, I mean, it is an intriguing end of the season. And it's sad. There's only 5 regular season games left.
Yeah.
And of course, we'll have the tournament, hopefully, and the NCAA tournament. But yeah, the season's ending pretty soon.
Do you know if the ACC is planning on rescheduling some of the games that got canceled due to COVID? Like we're missing a Louisville game. We're missing a Virginia Tech game. We're probably missing a couple. I know there's a Wake Forest game that we didn't play because we were supposed to play them twice.
Yeah. At this point, I don't think any makeups are going to happen. I just think it's too difficult. And, you know, we're seeing kind of the narrative is shifting at college basketball as a whole from making up games to how are we going to play the conference tournament.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and in order to get to the NCAA tournaments, the question becomes, how do you play the conference tournament safely? So, you know, this past week, the NCAA came out with a ruling that essentially said, like, listen, it's up to the conferences to determine how they want to do their auto bid. So, you know, typically conferences give their tournament champion the auto bid to the NCAA tournament.
Mm.
But that essentially gives teams the flexibility or conferences the flexibility. If they don't want to play their tournament out of caution before the NCAA tournament, maybe they give the auto bid to the regular season champion or something like that. So
kind of like the ACC last year, giving the championship to Florida
Congrats,
State.
Congrats, Florida State.
Right.
But yeah, the narrative has shifted. And honestly, as that narrative has shifted, I think the focus is pretty much gone from rescheduling these games. I mean, heck, we have less than a month until the ACC tournament. I just don't see how these games are going to get made up.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I was just... You know, I was thinking, and this was probably before the NCAA tournament and the ACC tournament had venues booked and everything, and I think that'd be a pain in the butt to reschedule and everything, but if the NCAA said, hey, let's extend the season, I think this was a possibility earlier that some people were floating around, but let's extend the season at like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, let everyone get healthy, and then we can reschedule some of those games. And yeah, that's what I was thinking. I think that would be fine. Honestly, at this point, I agree with you. I think they're just trying to get to the tournament to make some money and, you know, in the season. Yeah. You know, there's been so many games canceled this season and a lot of positive tests as well for different players and different teams. But I feel like if they get to the tournament, that'll be better because it will be in a bubble situation in Indianapolis. And I think it'll be a fun kind of thing where all the teams are in one spot.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, heck, I want the tournament so bad. I mean, tournaments like the first weekend of the tournament, that, you know, what, right. Thursday, Friday is just unreal.
Yeah, you take some days off of work.
Oh, absolutely.
Sit at home.
Absolutely. I remember I had to tell my boss last year, like, I took those days off, and the tournament gets canceled.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I can work those days now.
Can I get those days back?
I don't need to take those back.
Yeah. You know, it's so weird thinking about, and this is going off on a COVID tangent, but thinking about last year when we were in the, what were we, the 2 seed in the ACC tournament?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we were we were going to get a bid, probably going to be a 4 seed or a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament, even with the worst offense I've ever seen in the universe.
It's bad.
And the best defense I've ever seen out of a Virginia team. I think it's just good to reflect on what the year's been like since then. You know, we had that period of time without any sports, and then all we had was Korean baseball for like a week, and then cornhole came on ESPN for a while, and then of course we had the NBA bubble, which was really fun to watch, and football came back. That worked out pretty well, I think. How many NFL games were any NFL games canceled?
I don't think any were canceled. The NFL.
They moved a lot.
Because I know, yeah, I mean, Washington had some Monday or Tuesday games.
I feel like it was mostly Pittsburgh's fault.
Yeah, it was.
It was like they were playing on Wednesdays and Tuesdays for half the season.
But no, I don't think any NFL games were canceled, which is really remarkable.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. And, you know, there's a ton of college football games canceled. You know, UVA had a fair share at the beginning. Well, we had like 4 different starting openers.
Yeah, and then the Florida State game.
Yeah.
Another game got, I think Louisville got moved up a week. So I'm like, yeah, there were a couple.
But yeah, it's just interesting to think about. It's going to be almost a year, probably when the ACC tournament's about to start. It's going to be like midway through March when everything just kind of stopped happening. I think it's just interesting to think about. And, you know, kind of a strange time in our lives to, you know, we'll be remembering this forever. And, you know, it's a year past. How does sports look now? And how are sports going to be changed over the next couple of years as we kind of, you know, fall out from this? I think it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, no question. I also think that's a really good transition to kind of this other thing we wanted to talk about. Deviating kind of, you know, away a bit from directly to UVA, even though we'll still talk about UVA a bit here. It's just the NCAA coming out over the weekend with their top 16 seeds. Mm-hmm. So they put Virginia at number 9, which would be the top 3 seed. You know, just watching College Game Day Saturday morning, there was kind of some interesting reactions to Virginia. I know Jay Billis, like you said, you know, some of the people talking about how UVA really hasn't played anyone. Jay Billis was kind of, you know, pushing the same narrative that he thought Virginia was high. Mm-hmm. If anyone can still stand Jeff Goodman on Twitter, I'm sure Jeff Goodman thinks we're a bit too high. Yeah. But hey, I mean, we're ranked number 7 in the AP poll that came out today. What do you make of Virginia's ranking at number 9, top 3 seed in the tournament as of Saturday?
So what I say to everyone else is like, who else do you put there? Like at this point, I feel like the parity in college basketball this season is so large. There's some the Gonzaga and Baylor are far and away the best teams in the conference in the nation. If they don't meet in the title game, I will frankly be shocked, because at this point they're both playing so well. Mm-hmm. I think that the couple after them, you know, we're looking at like a Michigan, Ohio State, Illinois. Even Iowa, who's lost some games, they've got really good teams, and frankly, they're also, you know, doing pretty well overall. Even though, you know, the Big Ten is kind of eating itself alive at this point. But then like you drop off, you've got like on the three, like for example, the other 3 seeds in this tournament would be Texas Tech, Tennessee, West Virginia, and of course Virginia. The 4 seeds are Texas at this point, Texas, USC, Wisconsin, and Iowa. Like, I just don't know at this point if anyone is better than what we've put out. And I think that we've been so consistent over the past couple of weeks, you know, except for the 8-minute stretch against Tech where we decided to stop playing basketball for a little bit and just ran around the court for a little bit. That was frustrating. But, you know, besides that small section, we've been doing really well. And I think that we haven't played anyone because there's no one to play. You know, the ACC is so down this year. We don't really have a chance to play anyone. We would in a usual year be playing a good Duke team, good North Carolina team, pretty good Louisville teams, Pitt, Syracuse had a down, is having a down year as well. Florida State's good, and they're honestly going to be our biggest challenge. Clemson was good, but now they're not. It's not always up to us to play, to schedule these good games. You know, we get crushed by Gonzaga. That's not good. Arizona State, we didn't play them. Nope. That was last year. I'm sorry.
That's the Casey Morsell game.
Yeah. We were supposed to play Michigan State, but they're no longer good anymore. It's just...
Villanova, you know, was a possibility.
Villanova, we were supposed to play, but we couldn't play them because of COVID. We tried to play a good schedule, and you know, the two games that we've lost that would have really helped Gonzaga and Tech, not bad losses by any means. The game, I think this makes the Florida State game even more important.
Definitely. Tonight. I mean, especially to the, you know, to the Jay Billis crowd that mm-hmm. thinks we haven't played anyone. I don't know. He's not wrong. But it's also like when I heard you say that, the first thing that came to my mind was Dabo Swinney. Because mm-hmm. this is what Dabo says every year. It's like, yeah, we're really good. Maybe Virginia's not at that level in basketball. It comes in into football. But Dabo's like up on the podium saying, like, why are you guys mad at me? We just beat who we played, you know? And it's kind of the thing with college sports. Mm-hmm. You know, you're kind of dependent on who you play, you know, by your conference. Anyway, yeah, I mean, as a whole, I think you're totally right. I mean, who else are you going to put there? I mean, Virginia has won, you know, however many, like 8 of the past 9, 9 of the past 10, whatever it is, games. You know, Virginia has played well. You know, they dip, they climb their way back up. You know, we kind of mm-hmm. saw at the beginning of the season, what, we were 4th preseason, mm-hmm. and then we fell to like 20-something, yeah. and then now we're back up. Back you know, up to like, 7. It's not like people are just pegging Virginia there. I think, as a whole, I think most UVA fans will agree, like, when you watch us, we don't feel like the number 7 team in the country, necessarily. Right. But at the same time, you know, this is a year when Duke really isn't all that good, when Kentucky really isn't any good, you know, North Carolina's not that good. You know, all these typical programs that are up there just really aren't, you know? And like you said, you know, Baylor and Gonzaga, kind of the 1A, 1B, if you will, of the season. So yeah. it's a different dynamic than we're used to. And at this point, you know, everything works itself out. You know, we'll see in the conference tournaments. And once you get past the first weekend of March, you know, we'll kind of get a better feel for there once we get past the upsets. And, but yeah, I mean, this isn't Virginia's fault.
And you know, I'll also say that I think a lot of media people are over they're against betting against Tony Bennett. So if Tony Bennett's in charge of this team, they've seen it this 2 years in a row, really. I guess, you know, going back to the UMBC year even, you know, we were dominant that year as well
Really dominant that year.
Lose to UMBC, come back and win the tournament next year with a really good team as well. And then the year after, you know, we lose 3 guys to the NBA and Jack Salt, who honestly was, you know, team leader, defensive stud, stuff like that. And we come back and we're 2nd in the ACC again after being pegged to be, you know, 5th or 6th or something like that. So we were going to make the tournament, probably make some people's lives miserable, maybe not make it all the way to the Final Four again. But, you know, they were doing a lot better than people thought. This year, same deal, you know, kind of a weird year. I think a lot of the stuff is thrown out the window this year, but still a really good UVA team that's dominating people on defense. And when you hold a team that's as prestigious as North Carolina to 48 points, and really I think it's less than 51 over the past three games that we've played them. There's maybe a really weird stat like maybe. That.
I believe that.
It's
certainly last year's games.
Right, and I think that it just wakes people up. It's like, oh, this is still a good team. It's probably not as good as some of the other teams in the country, but they're good and we're not betting against Tony Bennett anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair point. Yeah. Like you said, really, you know, Duke is the only team consistently in the ACC where we really struggle again. I mean, if you want to throw out a Michigan State from the tournaments, you know, several years ago, you could mm-hmm. too. But yeah, I mean, Virginia takes care of business, man.
Yeah. And I do want to talk about the rest of the ACC in the NCAA tournament, how many teams are going to make it. But first, I do want to talk about our sponsors, BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. It has real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use the code ARMCHAIR at checkout. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. We're also sponsored by eBay Sneakers. From rare dead stocks to the latest release, you can find the exact sneaker you're looking for on eBay. As the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is the place to go to cop the pair you've been eyeing. With eBay's authenticity guarantee, a team of independent professional authenticators. Got it.
Oh, that's a word.
It's a big word. That's why they pay us the big bucks. Authenticators perform a rigorous inspection of the sneakers you purchase before they're sent to you, so you can shop confidently knowing your pair is the real deal. And for sneaker sellers out there, eBay has eliminated selling fees on sneakers over $100, making it free to sell or flip your collection. Whether the site's taking as much as 25%, you're going to have a lot of extra money for it. You guessed it, more sneakers. Check out ebay.com/sneakers today. All right, so we've talked about kind of the tournament in general a little bit. I want to talk about some of the ACC teams that are probably going to make the tournament as well. There's probably three locks at this point, I would say. And I would say Virginia, Florida State, and Virginia Tech are probably all going to make it, unless there's some disastrously collapse for either of those teams, although I doubt that's going to happen because Virginia's only lost three games, Florida State's only lost three games, and Tech's only lost four games. But after that, it gets a little bit more complicated. Rob, how many teams from the ACC do you think are going to make the tournament, just based off of, you know, what you're looking at right now?
Yeah, well, I'm looking at Joe Lenardi's page right now.
Right.
Joe Lenardi says six. So we'll start with that as a baseline. I agree. I think Virginia, Florida State, and Virginia Tech are, you know, quote unquote locks. Then, you know, I see Louisville and North Carolina as probables at this point. But at the same time, like you said, anything could change. You know, North Carolina could lose a couple in a row. Same with Louisville. Those are like the five that I have that I think most confidently of. Now, Lenardi, the other team he has in there is Clemson. He has Clemson as an 8 seed right now, which I think is kind of interesting, you know, considering how far they fell off, at least since UVA just beat the tar out of them a month and a half ago. So, looking at the ACC, my two cents is I would say five are probable.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think five, maybe. I feel like Clemson could make it. You know, Syracuse has a good record, but they haven't really beaten anyone. Mm-hmm. And the one team I really wish would make it would be Georgia Tech. I think Georgia Tech's come a long way this season. I like their team. I think they're fun. They're pretty scrappy. Alvarado's like a
great
baller,
player.
Really good player. And but they just don't have the win totals. You know, they've lost six ACC games so far, and they're 6-6 in the ACC, 10-8 overall. And unfortunately, their two non-conference losses are against Georgia State and Mercer, and not good teams. And you know, they lost to Georgia State. I think that was a crazy game. That was a four overtime game that they played. So just an insane game. And then Mercer, they lost the next game. So I think it's tough to put them in there with that kind of schedule. But I like where they're playing. They're, I think, seventh in the ACC right now in terms of eighth in the ACC right after Syracuse. So I like where they're going. You know, I think the only way they can get in is if they win the tournament. But I'm just, you know, I like where they're headed. And I don't think Pastner is a good coach. I just think that their team is, you know, pretty good this year.
Yeah, I mean, Pastner's been there a while. This isn't like a up and coming thing. No, but I'm with you. I mean, definitely credit where credit is due to Georgia Tech, which, you know, who would have thought coming into the season they'd be tied with Duke in the middle of the ACC standings, right, both at 6-6. But yeah, I mean, Georgia Tech has played some teams very well, Virginia included.
So the other teams that usually make the tournament but probably won't this season from the ACC is Duke, of course, and Syracuse, who is, I feel like, always an 11 seed in the tournament.
They're always sneaking their way in.
They always sneak their way in somehow. Is there a way that Syracuse could sneak their way in? I don't know if, you know, how closely you followed Syracuse this season, but, like, they haven't really beaten anyone. Their best win is against Virginia Tech, who we didn't beat. They don't really have any bad losses. They lost to Rutgers, who's a good team. Their ACC losses are Pitt twice, UNC, us, and Clemson. Mm-hmm. So there's no bad losses. There's just no good wins. It's kind of like us, except we're a much better team than them.
Yeah, I mean, if you're, what, 6th, 7th in the ACC, most years that's good enough to get into the tournament.
Right.
It's just a down year for the conference, you know, not having Duke traditionally up there. You know, Notre Dame hasn't been up there for a few years, but yeah, there were a couple of years Notre Dame was up there.
Pitt, too.
Pitt, you know, you could even throw NC State in there. NC State sometimes will get close.
Miami.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I mean, half the ACC, yeah. With the exception of Boston College, poor Jim Christian.
Yeah, just got fired today. Yeah,
rough look.
But, like, should have happened a couple of years ago, probably.
Well, I was reading an article earlier today, I forget who wrote it, but it might have been Mike Barber, but basically they were saying, not to go off on a completely different tangent, but how is Boston College going to hire another coach? I mean, they've been right, so bad for so long.
Yeah.
They basically told Jim Christian, hey, you guys are going to play with 4 scholarship players against Florida State until Florida State had to cancel the game. It wasn't even Boston College that canceled that game. It seems like they just rake that team over the coals consistently from an administrative standpoint. So good luck finding a new coach, I guess.
Was Jim Christian the coach when they went winless in basketball? Or did...
When was that? Because, he's been there 6 or 7 years, I think.
7 years, yeah. I'm going to Google it real quick.
Okay.
But, yeah, like, I just feel like it's been too long.
Oh, yeah.
For that kind of...
You knew that was never going to turn around.
Right.
You know, not to say I know the ins and outs of Boston College basketball, but never felt like they ever got any sort of momentum going within that program.
Okay, so for the people playing the game out there, what year do you think Boston College went? Remember, they went winless in men's basketball and football that season in the ACC.
I'll guess 2015.
It was 2016. Okay. Yeah, so he was definitely the coach then.
Okay.
So they allowed that to happen, and then he still stayed 5 more years.
That's crazy. I mean, that's like Mike London, man. We kept that poor man around forever.
No, I know. I just think, you know, it's just crazy. But, like, and that was the year that I don't know if you remember this, the really sad interview with the I think it was a center for Boston College. He was a senior, and he was like, what were your memories of Boston College? He's like, you know, getting food with my teammates and stuff like that. I just really a sad interview at the end.
Anyway, Boston College is not making the tournament.
They're not making
the tournament. We'll see if they can hire a basketball coach. But definitely won't be in the tournament this year.
No, definitely will not be in the tournament. Yeah, I just think, I feel like this is how the Pac-12 feels all the time. You know,
Conference
they have a lot of really bad teams and some okay teams. And then like one really good team. Mm-hmm. And this year, I think the ACC probably has 3 pretty good teams. There's no really good teams this year in the ACC. Mm-hmm. And I think most of them are just pretty average so far. And, you know, honestly, most of the ACC is within at least one game of 500. You know, you're looking at Pitt, Notre Dame, Duke, Georgia Tech, Syracuse, North Carolina, and Clemson, all in the middle of the pack, all within one game of 500. At least, and, you know, North Carolina and Clemson are 2 games ahead of 500.
Well, that's the thing. The middle of the pack is so jumbled. You know, Virginia, as we speak, has a 2.5 game lead. That could change depending on what happens tonight.
Which is crazy. Like, that's a huge
lead. Oh, yeah, it's huge. I mean, we're 11-1. Florida State, from winning percentage, they've played less games, is 7-2. But, yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, spots, call it 2 through 10 basically are within 3 games of each other.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. That's crazy. And then, you know, Wake and Miami and BC just fall right off. So yeah, it's been a crazy year in the ACC, and I'm looking forward to when the ACC's back. And I don't know if this is just a COVID thing or if, you know, generally it's just down this year. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think we're a year away from knowing, obviously, with COVID, with COVID. But I think really the most interesting thing here is kind of, I would say, Duke kind of by and large, but also just kind of the whole idea of one and dones in general. You know, we're seeing, you know, with more options for players, you know, kind of, you know, Coach K and Cal, you know, have they lost a step? Is this just not their best roster? But how do they develop players? You know, we're dealing with a lot of variables right now that we've kind of seen coming for some time. But at the same time, this is the first year they've really manifested themselves into some not great teams, even when there's talent. So I'm curious to see how next year, you know, maybe a better top half of the recruiting class, at least, you know, the 2021 guys, maybe over the 2020. So I'm curious to see how it plays out next year. But yeah, I mean, easy to say. Hopefully COVID is, you know, much less of a problem next year. So easier to say, you know, yeah, we'll know a year from now. But I do think there's some macro trends that we really need to see how they play out as far as one and done and roster development goes at kind of these top programs.
Mm-hmm. I kind of agree with you. I think, honestly, COVID has a lot to do with it because these teams didn't have a chance to gel before the season starts. I mean, this is not normal for Kentucky, but Kentucky oftentimes, if you remember when they went to the national championship game a couple years ago as an 8 seed, they really were pretty bad at the beginning of the season. And then over the course of the season, they got a lot better, and then they made the tournament and they just cruised through the first 5 games or whatever. And so I think with some preseason stuff, I think it would have been a lot better. I also think this is just, you know, one of K's worst teams, honestly.
Because
you know, you don't have a, you know, talent like Zion on your team. You don't have you know, the leadership that you normally do. His team is so young. He starts 3 freshmen and 2 sophomores. So, and of course they've had injuries as well. I think it's just tough overall to judge how good they could have been during the season. Although I still think, you know, having a team like Gonzaga or Baylor at the top instead of Kentucky or Duke just makes life so much better, because it just shows that one and done is garbage and you should just develop players normally like everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting debate, and I can tell you it's gotten traction on the message boards. You know, not so much the idea of one and dones, but, you know, how do you go about building a roster around one and dones? And there's obviously very little consistency or predictability with that.
It's just so tough because, you know, you got a guy like Henry Coleman is a great example, right? He's at Duke right now, sitting at the end of the bench, he's not getting any playing time. If he goes to a place like Virginia Tech, which was, you know, one of his, you know, pretty much Duke, UVA, and Virginia Tech, I think, that were mainly for him. If he goes to a place like Virginia Tech, you know, he's playing pretty much right away for Mike Young. And at Duke, there's people ahead of him who are, you know, better on paper, but are they better for the team? Do they fit together, right? Because you can recruit all these great pieces, but if they don't mesh well, that doesn't work out right. It doesn't work out. So I think what you're seeing at places like Duke is really good players who are not working well together, because I don't know how K recruits, you hear about this on recruiting trails a lot, like promising playing time, promising starting, stuff like that. You know, does K do that? I don't know. But my guess would be that he's recruiting players and playing them because that's what people expect to happen when you have 5-star players. You expect them to start, right? I think that's just what's happening, and it's not working out well.
Yeah, and I mean, not to go too far down this rabbit hole, but, you know, another great example, you know, like we've brought up Kentucky before, you know, Coach Cal's whole recruiting mindset is, you know, not, he's not, obviously he wants to win games once they're there, but his goal isn't necessarily to win games. His goal is to get players to the NBA. So there'll be times where there'll be a junior, you know, for example, and he might be the better player, but he's not going to play him because he's got this freshman that his goal is to get this freshman to the NBA next season. So he'll go that route. So anyway, you know, you talk about roster construction and Cal. I mean, does he even care about roster construction?
Right.
You know, you know, we're at the very, one and done's been going on for, you know, 10, 20 years, you know, ever since the rule was implemented. But now with the G League, now with more international options, and, you know, and this year with not so much success out of the one and done teams, it will be interesting to see if anything changes moving forward.
Well, you know, because one and done is an NBA rule.
Exactly.
One and done is not a college basketball rule. So one and done helps NBA teams scout players more. It has nothing to do with helping out kids. It has nothing to do with helping out college basketball. It has everything to do with NBA wanting to see if these are actually good players. Now, Adam Silver has come out maybe last year, said one and done is going to be gone and, you know, the 2020s at some point. You know, I don't know if there's a set date or if there's, you know, rule changes going through the NBA. My guess is not right now. I guess they have some bigger stuff to worry about right now. But I think that at some point it's going to go away. And when that happens, my hope is that there's a little bit more parity in college basketball moving forward. Because you're not going to have people like Zion and RJ Barrett and, you know, Cam Reddish, who wasn't even that good, on the same team.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you're going to get people spreading out more. You're going to get players who are staying, more teams who are having players stay for longer. You're going to have less of these dramatic jumps from, like, you look at Duke. Duke went from having maybe one of the best basketball teams of all time with Zion, losing in the Elite Eight, and then going to being a trash team 2 years later.
Yep.
Same thing with Kentucky. So, like, the year Kentucky went from winning the NCAA championship to losing the first round of the NIT. So, I think that when you get more parity across basketball, it'll be more fun to watch. That's my hope, and, you know, but who knows when that will actually happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about this for days. And there's literally professionals who talk about this for days. So.
So we don't need to do that. We're not professionals or anything like that.
But it is interesting. It is interesting.
It's an interesting topic. And, I mean, hopefully it will happen sooner rather than later. But at this point, I think a lot of people are seeing, like, wow, you really need time with the freshmen, especially if you're going to be starting all of them. Or you need at least a leader, someone who actually knows what they're doing on the basketball court, who's been there for 4 years. Like Duke last year, Javon Delorier was a great leader for them. I mean, he wasn't their best player by far, but he was a really solid defender, great rebounder, hustle player, like typical Duke player, right?
Yeah.
And he was a senior as well, so he was able to lead that team of youngsters, even though, you know, Vernon Carey got probably more minutes than him. Was that the right call for that team? Probably. But, you know, you need at least someone to be there. And at this point, I don't think Duke has that kind of player.
Yeah, I would agree.
Anything else? I don't want to talk about Duke anymore. Anything else you want to talk about with tournament, Florida State game tonight? Anything else before we move on to 100 years of guys and ties?
God, 100 years. no, let's reflect a little bit, man. Let's reflect.
So we started this. We're in season 3 now. Season 3, for some reason, seasons begin in like...
Self-proclaimed seasons.
Season 3 is going to end in July. We started
in August, I think. August, I remember our July. First episode was essentially like... Our first episodes were essentially, is Bryce Perkins going to be any good?
Yeah.
So...
Does Bryce Perkins know how to throw a football?
Yeah, and he's on the Rams, so what do
now
we know?
Now he's great, yeah, so we don't know anything. To be fair, first game we saw him, or one of the first games was at Indiana, and he could not throw a football
that was
in that
bad.
Game.
Well, also the Richmond game, like one of his first throws was a pick six.
Yeah.
To a D lineman. It's like, how many Mike Rocco passes to D linemen have we seen?
Right, exactly.
Anyway.
So we've come, I think, a long way since then. We've got ads now, which is great.
Very true.
We sold out.
Didn't sell out for much, but we sold out.
Hey, we're not losing money.
That is true.
Which is good.
The ad revenue has surpassed the investment in equipment now.
Exactly.
So, yeah, so we're ahead.
We're ahead. You know, that's all you want in life, to come out ahead. But we're not in them for the money. I love talking about UVA sports and doing it with you. So it's been really fun to do it for these past 100 times.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't have said it better. Obviously, like, you know, for people who do listen, or even for people who don't, you know, both of us grew up like Virginia fans. Dustin, you being from Charlottesville, I was from Roanoke, but made the trek up pretty much every fall weekend for football games. And at UVA, you know, you were who crew president. You know, even added a fifth year in there.
Victory lap.
You know, I was in who crew with Dustin, which is how we know each other. And then
also sports editor.
Editor of Cav Daily. So obviously something we've cared about for a while. And you know, as I came out of college, especially that first year out when, you know, just working investment banking hours was absolutely terrible. And, you know, just kind of looking, you know, you go from college where it's so social and where, you know, you're surrounded and able to do your passions kind of, you know, so easily, you know, like I cared so much about UVA sports and was all literally right there, you know, free tickets to every game. I could get interviews with basically whoever I wanted through Cav Daily. To go from that to graduating college where all of a sudden, you know, you're hours away from Charlottesville, you're living in an apartment, you know, you're not going to games anymore. Does this bar have ESPNU?
You have to pay for tickets.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to donate money to pay for tickets.
Yeah.
You can't just buy a ticket. You have to donate money to then pay for
the ticket.
You
got to reach a threshold. So, yeah, obviously this podcast has been great, you know, helping, you know, it's been great, obviously, spending time with you, like, first and foremost. And then, you know, even beyond that, just giving us, like, a connection to the community and, like, you know, it's been weird this past year because we're not really able to go to games because of COVID or anything like that. But, you know, I know occasionally, you know, like at the Final Four, or like at football games, some people would be like, oh, you're like guys in ties. Not that many people, but people would be like, oh, you're like, y'all
do
guys
in
ties.
The one story you told me was really funny. You tell it best, but Rob was walking down the street and someone just yelled out, Elder!
Yeah, yeah. This was the Miami football game. So it was right when... it was the night game, so it was a little bit after we started. I think it was October.
It was Yar.
It was Yar, and we were there. And I was just like walking to a tailgate on the lawn, and someone was like, "Yo, like you're the guys in ties guy." Yeah, he said Elder. It's like, that's Elder, right? I'm like, yeah. that was a fun moment.
Yeah,
so it gives us like a little bit of connection, you know, as we've gotten farther out of college, our schedules have become a bit more hectic. I mean, Dustin's engaged.
Unpredictable.
So, you know, we still like to have guests when we can, but, you know, for a time there, we were able to, you know, we had some really great guests on in the UVA sports community as well. So it's been great, and just interacting with people on Twitter and what have you. So it's been a great platform and more than even I could have asked for.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing is we've covered probably one of the greatest stretches of UVA sports in a long time, right? Think about the national championship in basketball to the national championship in lacrosse, even to the Orange Bowl bid that the football team got the fall after that. I feel like that whole year was a crazy time. Like 2019 was a great year for UVA sports, and we were lucky enough to really kind of, I'm not going to say we rode the wave, but we started the fall before. So really, we started at the perfect time. We had an emergency pod when Braxton Key became eligible. And that was a key moment in that championship run. I think, you know, honestly, it's been great. And I'm looking forward to the next 100 years of Guys in Ties podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I love how you say 100 years, man. I mean...
100 more years, Guys in Ties. Well, it's only been 100 episodes. It's been, what, 2.5 years?
Because
we're in season 3.
Yeah, 2.5. And it could have come a lot sooner. You know, with COVID, there were several weeks where we're just like, nothing's happening. We don't even know if anything will happen, but we know nothing is happening right now.
Yeah, it was maybe 2 months where we really didn't talk a lot?
Yeah. I mean, that was during, you know, you're vaccinated now, which is awesome.
Yeah,
I'm not, although keeping a smaller circle, I guess. But
Rob might never get vaccinated.
That is true. I don't have my hopes up
group
for that.
Group Z.
Yeah, Group Z. Let's go back to A again. We'll hit Y and then we'll circle back.
Yeah.
Like, anyway. So, I mean, obviously there was a lot of times with that too. So, no, I mean, it's been great. And obviously, you know, like, I think the big thing with all of it is, you know, for us, we're so passionate about this. So it gives us a platform and a reason to, like, talk about this and maybe not feel so weird and have give, like, people a choice. Like, oh, yeah, we want to hear Rob and Dustin talk about UVA sports, or we don't, so we're not going to,
right.
Whatever it may be. But, no, just having the interactions, obviously, between each other, but with other people and, you know, Twitter, the media world, you know, all the above. It's been a really great experience.
Yeah, so it's like the people who listen make it fun, and the people who interact with us on Twitter make it fun. So we appreciate everyone who's stuck with us for 100 episodes. If you've listened to all 100, good job. I know I haven't.
Well, the first episode isn't even out there.
No,
not to cut you. That, no. That's just in cyberspace.
Yeah,
somewhere.
Yeah. Well, good thing it was.
Yeah,
it was weird.
Come a long way.
It was a
I
weird
guess.
Time. We've come a long way, and we really found ourselves. I think we've improved a lot as well. I definitely say less. Or, you know, mm-hmm. I'm a big, you know, guy, but we have definitely learned that. And, but everyone on like Twitter and who listens on iTunes or Spotify, really, thank y'all for making this worth it. Cause if no one listened, we would still do it, but it wouldn't be as fun because we wouldn't like have to interact with anyone. So thank you to everyone who listens, and I hope y'all enjoy what we do.
Yeah, and also credit to Dustin for editing our episodes, and Dustin 99.9% of the time runs the Guys and Ties Twitter account as well. So well, I'll slide in every now and then.
Credit to Rob for knowing all the stats about football when I don't. So
we balance each other out, man.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Anyway, it's been a fun ride. I'm looking forward to the next 100, and thank you to everyone else for sticking around with us. And working with us. We got some fun things planned for the next 100 episodes. We can't say them right now, but we will later. Maybe. Hopefully. Anyway, I think we're going to end this. This has gone on. This is the longest podcast we've had in a long time. So thank you to everyone for sticking around. This has been the Guys and Ties podcast. Been good to have Rob with me today.
Absolutely.
Doesn't always happen because of COVID.
Always a pleasure.
Or, you know, he works ungodly hours too. But make sure to follow us on Twitter at Guys and Ties Pod. Make sure to follow us on Spotify and iTunes if you like what you hear. Give us a follow on Snapchat and Instagram as well for all the bonus content out there. And we will see y'all next time whenever we do a pod. Go Hoos.
Go Hoos.